Every person of full age, neither owning nor having owned 50 acres of land, shall be entitled to an appropriation of 50 acres of land, or to so much as shall make up what he owns or has owned to 50 acres in full and absolute dominion. And this is an extremely radical proposal. It's in fact one that the American people will not finally embrace until the Homestead Acts of the mid-19th century. To Edmund Pendleton, he explains, "I was for extending the rights of suffrage, or in other words, the rights of a citizen, to all who had permanent intentions of living in the country." So we're beginning to see Jefferson emerge as a champion of democracy and a champion of what will ultimately become grassroots participatory life of the small yeoman, of the small independent farmer. Nonetheless, there's also an element of conservatism in the document, of what I've described as patriciate optimacy. For example, outside of high sheriffs and coroners of counties, no local officials are elected. All other officers, civil and military, shall be appointed by the administrator, that's his name for the governor, and such appointment shall be subject to the negative of the Privy Council. Which is to say, at the local grassroots level, almost all important officials will be appointed by the central government. What makes that even more conservative is that the governor himself is not popularly elected. Only the assembly is popularly elected, and they choose the administrator. Moreover, the Senate also is not popularly elected. The Senate is also chosen by that legislature for very long terms. As he again explains to Edmund Pendleton, "I had two things in view, to get the wisest men chosen and to make them perfectly independent when chosen. I have ever observed that a choice by the people themselves is not generally distinguished for its wisdom. For this reason it was that I proposed the representatives, and not the people, should choose the Senate." So Jefferson, although he's moving towards a more radical democratic position, still has mistrust of the common man, still mistrusts his ability to make a wise choice for the upper chamber of the legislature. And as for the extended term, Jefferson himself says he's not particularly keen about having a long term for the senator, but yet I could submit, though not so willingly, to an appointment for life, or to anything rather than a mere creation by and dependence on the people. So I think we see in this Constitution Jefferson's thought in transition. He's still tied to the past, tied to the traditional elitism of Virginia political society, but there's also a sense in which he's trying to move forward. It's that same sense of dual vision that informs Jefferson's program of legal reforms known as the Report of the Committees of Revisers. Jefferson submits this in 1779, and again, much of it is not passed, and that which is passed many years later. But it shows a combination of various elements: pluralistic tolerance, enlightened faith and didacticism, and also traditional repression. Take, for example, this bill for establishing religious freedom. This exemplifies the Enlightenment goal of religious tolerance, an end to bigotry, and pluralism. It also, however, radically denigrates the significance of religious belief for can't help when describing the need for religious toleration to throw in a swipe at traditional religious Christianity. As he states, that our civil rights have no dependence on our religious opinions any more than our opinions in physics or geometry. So it's not simply that an established religion violates the liberties of conscience. It's rather that religious faith is fundamentally irrelevant to civic and political life. As he states in the Notes on the State of Virginia, the legitimate powers of government extend to such acts only as are injurious to others. But it doesn't mean no injury for my neighbor to say there are 20 gods or no god. It neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg. Reason and free inquiry are the only effectual agents against error. And the act that finally does get passed by the Assembly of Virginia, his Act for Establishing Religious Freedom in 1786, still has some of this sentiment. Our civil rights have no dependence on our religious opinions more than our opinions in physics or geometry. So it's not simply that people have the right to conscience. It's also that religious faith is irrelevant to public life. There's also a heavy residue of Enlightenment faith in the progress of reason and science through public education. And here, the famous bill is a bill for the more general diffusion of knowledge.